Do you ever think of yourself as actually dead, lying in a box with a lid on it?
Nope.
Nor do I, really. Silly to be depressed by it. I mean, one thinks of it like being alive in a box. One keeps forgetting to take into account the fact that one is dead. Which should make all the difference. Shouldn't it? I mean, you'd never know you're in a box, would you? It would be just like you were asleep in a box. Not that I'd like to sleep in a box, mind you. Not without any air. You'd wake up dead for a start, and then where would you be? In a box. That's the bit I don't like, frankly. That's why I don't think of it.
The theatre, the theatre.
Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater.
The play's the thing.
Oh, hey friends.
How hey y'all.
Hey y'all. We did something last night.
We had a show last night.
May I be sentimental for a moment?
Oh God. Sure.
There. So inside baseball, y'all, this season we've been recording on Tuesday evenings, but all three of us have been in rehearsals for a brand new musical, and it's been
workshop.
A lot of fun, a workshop. So we couldn't meet Tuesday night. So it's 11:30 on a Saturday morning.
It's 11:30.
The morning after did the show, and then I stayed till after 1 in the morning.
Yeah, I didn't get to sleep
till
2:30.
For me these days.
Yeah.
But there was something lovely about waking up this morning, and I keep talking about how I'm out of theater shape, like doing the day jobs and then going to rehearsals every night of the week.
Yeah.
But there's something lovely about waking up the morning after a show, and it was a great night, and there were lots of good people there, and I had a lot of fun. But just being exhausted the next morning, but over something that I've had such a good time doing.
Yeah.
Namely theater, and I'm tired, but I'm very happy this morning.
I'm also very tired. My voice is quite tired. I'm going to be speaking.
You guys sang like motherfuckers last night, and I can't thank you enough. It was an amazing cast, and we'd been busting balls on a very big musical to try and get a presentation up, and you all rocked it, like the entire cast did, and there were some insane folks in that cast. So,
I want to admit something here on the podcast. I missed a line last night, and the reason that I did that because I wrote my lines into the music, I wrote it in the wrong place. So I thought was one more line. So I was like, who's that other line? Let's go. Who says this? And it was never said.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And so then I was like, okay. And then I started to say it, but then Allie said it. And I was like, oh no, the stage reader said it, and stage direction reader. And then I was like, oh no. And then everyone continued, and I was like, oh. But then backstage, I got reamed for it by multiple people. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in a fun way. It was like, hey, like out loud, someone was like, hey, what's going on with that moment? Like, I mean, I was like, it's
really
me.
Passive aggressive. You know?
Shut up, Lucas. I love
you. Wildly passive aggressive.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. No, it was good times. But it's Midsummer's Nightmare.
A Midsummer Nightmare. What's going on?
Is that a ringer?
It's my ringtone. Sorry, y'all. I don't know why this is on. I apologize.
You got a song ringer. Mine are just like fun sounds or something. Well, I guess.
Oh, do you have an iPhone?
The Raiders. Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
I have the Raiders march from Indiana Jones.
I've got all kinds of stuff. CJ is a fart sound.
Yeah. I've got a lot of Adventure
Bailey,
Time.
Bailey,
the iPhone of you to have a fart sound.
Bailey, you're the sound of.
Shut up, Google boy.
No, this is good times. We're here to talk theater though, and this is an important episode. We probably have a lot of people starting. Like, this is an entry point for a lot of people who are going to be like, "What the fuck is this podcast?" And I'm okay with that. But if we haven't lost you yet, then welcome to Theater. The theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. Very sleepy theater makers from the LA theater scene. Giggly theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss, debate, and disseminate the evolutions of the great playwrights by taking a macro look at three of their plays. Mm-hmm. And this is part one of three of our mini-series covering the works of Tom Stoppard. That's right. Yeah. It's Rosenpod and Gildencast are dead.
Yes.
During this series, we'll be taking a macro look at the plays Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Yes. Arcadia.
Yeah.
And Scott's rogue pick, Rock and Roll, which we're all excited to talk about. That'll be in the finale episode. But in the meantime, hey guys, like what? Stoppard.
Right.
Yeah.
We've been talking about him every season, and we finally are doing him. First season, we were like, okay, we're going to end with Stoppard. I think we even announced it a couple times where we were like, we're ending with Stoppard. And then we chose not to, to close it out a little quicker for Christmas break. We were like, well, if we want to do Shakespeare's comedies.
Keeps getting pushed out. Yeah.
So then we did, we were going to do it last season, and kind of the same thing happened. So this season, we're like, we're going to make sure we do it. But this is our final miniseries, playwright miniseries of this season. Technically,
yeah,
because next will be a bonus episode and stuff, and then after that will be Shakespeare's histories,
yes,
and then we're done. So I guess you could count that, but we've already done tragedies and comedies, and we're just closing out every season with some more Shakespeare.
We're doing some kind of Shakespeare before Shakespeare. That's kind of
some fun. Shakespeare before Shakespeare. Oh yeah, that's good times. We love that. Can I hear a little bit from y'all? Your context with Stoppard. Do you know him? Do you love him? What's the word, hummingbird?
Yeah, I'll start.
I'm glad you knew that hummingbird was you, Scott. Go ahead.
I'm a happy hummingbird.
Yeah.
I had discovered Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead after, right after I discovered Waiting for Godot. And it was given to me by somebody who was like, oh, you like Godot? Like, check this out. And it kind of blew me away. And then when I learned out that Stoppard had written some other stuff, namely like Brazil, the movie Brazil, and I ended up doing like, a cutting of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern with my buddy Dave Jolly in high school for a theater tournament. And so that was the first time I got to play it. Then had done readings of it afterwards. I've seen only one production of it that wasn't great, but yeah. And then just sort of learning who he was. And when we get into Arcadia next week, I got to see a production of that at the Goodman in the late 90s that was really phenomenal and kind of blew my mind. And then had just read things. I'd seen The Real Inspector Hound and then just sort of, you know, yeah, became a fan that way.
You're a fan. You're a stan. You're a Stoppard stan.
Stoppard stan.
Siege. What's the tale, Nightingale?
I have seen Shakespeare in Love. That's about it.
And you love it. You love that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah, you love that movie.
I
do too, to be clear.
I have a feeling that I was made to read Rosencrantz and Guildenstern or Arcadia in college. I had both scripts on my bookshelf. So, I know I'd read Rosencrantz at some point, but like just very little and just for no other reason other than he hasn't really crossed my path a whole lot other than Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, he's crossed your path in another way that's about to blow your mind.
Dune. He wrote Dune.
No.
Frank Herbert is his.
No, we'll Frank Herbert.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it.
I would lose my shit. Turns out I have a Stoppard quote tattooed on me.
Here's the mind killer. Yes.
Tom Stoppard. Bailey, what about you?
Yeah, I actually... Stoppard was introduced to me with the monologue from RNG, the coffin. Do you ever think of yourself as actually dead, lying in a box with the lid on it? That monologue was done in a class when I was at Hogwarts. Someone got up and did it in a monologue class, and I was like... oh shit, what is that play?
Right.
And picked it up from the script library and read it within the week and loved it and would like beg them to do it. And they're like, it's too big. It's not, you know, well, maybe someday, but right now we're focusing on blah, blah, blah. So then I went, I transferred from Hogwarts. It was the saddest day of my life. I transferred and at the state school where I was at, getting another degree, which was Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Go Shockers.
Mm. Shockers.
Yeah, the Shockers.
no shit.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And I just thought of so many things I could tell you about Wichita State. I'm not going to do it. The point is, they did RNG my first semester there. And I was like, ooh, hell yeah. So I played Claudius.
Oh, nice.
And it was super fun. And the director was an ass. But besides that, it was quite good. The two people who played RNG are still two of my good friends, Caleb Kaufman and Trevor Comstock. They were
cool.
Genius, hilarious. And the guy who played Hamlet was my dear friend Damien, who I have a actual rap album with that exists.
What? Oh my god!
Yeah, that's crazy shit. But nostalgia's flowing through my mind now. I don't want to go too deep into it, but I also since then have seen Arcadia a couple times. I love the RNG movie for what it is. I think it's really great. And we should talk about that
because I watched that for this too.
We'll absolutely talk about it. But yeah, I do. There's this one Tom Stoppard quote that I will be inking on my body sometime. I don't know when. Fear is the mind killer. The reason you brought that, I'm glad you brought that up because it's from RNG. And but out of context, it's less exciting. Out of context, I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's just relax, respond.
Mm.
Okay. Relax, period, respond, period, right?
That's great.
And that's been a lot of my life motto, especially in like confrontation. Mm-hmm. Is like, okay, relax yourself, take a deep breath, and then like respond the way that your heart is telling you to respond, and that's what you go with, right? But like if you've taken that moment and you've relaxed, then you can trust yourself. So that's good.
That's a really good idea for a tattoo.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I don't know how it's gonna happen, but and then I'm gonna get one on my forearm really big in block letters, and then on the other one it's gonna say ego is the enemy.
You know what? You should get relax, respond as a tramp stamp.
Aww. You did not relax and then respond before making that decision.
I'm going to get a Cobb salad tramp stamp.
Cobb salad.
That's actually kind of cool. That's meta and funny. And I like it. It pertains to what we're talking about here. Okay, well, that's our context. Now y'all know more about where we're coming from. I think it's worth mentioning before we do this next segment, I think we should say this at the top of every play right now.
Say it.
If you are going to take a test on this play or on Tom Stoppard.
Oh my, no.
You should maybe choose a different podcast. We are a bantery, digressory, that's not a word, but we
digressory.
Yeah.
Very W of you.
I think. Thanks. Yeah. Weird. Kind of Stoppard of me. I don't know. I feel like RNG are constantly doing that shit.
Stoppard is maybe W is Stoppard.
Stoppard's everyone.
Stoppard is life.
Okay. I'm taking off my headphones. So where was I? If you're going to take a test on this guy, on Tom Stoppard, the man himself, maybe move on. Okay. We get a lot of really great. In fact, we should read this. Maybe I'll do it on the next episode. But we got a really great Brecht email about our Brecht miniseries from somebody who listened in and had a couple corrections, and I was like, hell yeah, I love that. We love corrections because we just are talking out of our asses. But they were also very engaged and enjoyed a lot of what we had to say, and and it would have been fun to get into it with this person. But I'll read that next time because it was very interesting.
It was cool.
Specifically,
yeah.
I was saying mahogany, and it's mahogany.
Mahogany.
Oh, yes.
Good to know. Oh, yes. Quiet.
Crime, crime, crime.
Anyway, yeah, my accent game is shit recently, y'all. I don't know what's happened. I don't since I had COVID. I think COVID ruins
your it ruined COVID the spot in your brain for dialects.
Yeah, because truly, my dialect game has died recently. I don't know what it is. And,
it's just a muscle you need to work.
As you
if
heard
you got
at
back
the beginning of this
be
episode, the scene at the beginning of this episode proves that I am all over the map. I go Scottish. I go Australian. Okay, Scott, there's something I really love that you do.
Well, we can't talk about it on the podcast.
Oh
my God.
Not that.
Oh,
the
oh
other...
Lord. Oh, God.
Yikes.
Scottpedia.
That's right. It's Scottpedia. Scottpedia,
yeah.
Tell us. Give us your pedia.
Yeah. So there's a lot on Tom Stoppard. And this cat has had a fascinating life and certainly a fascinating childhood. Sir Tom Stoppard was born Thomas Strausler on July 3rd, 1937. He was born in Czechoslovakia. Stoppard.
Hold one second. Am I crazy? Or have the last like four or five playwrights we've covered had... used a pseudonym or a different name than what they were originally given at birth.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, Brecht. Was Birdie, and yeah, names changed because, well, and his
Oscar Wilde, didn't he have a different name? Oh, no, he just had a really long name.
He just had a really long name, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We cover a lot of white dudes. Keep going.
Yeah.
Listen.
He was born in Czechoslovakia. Stoppard left as a child refugee fleeing imminent Nazi occupation. He was born in the city of Zlín, a city dominated by the shoe manufacturing industry.
Shoe like that you wear on your feet, or like yeah, the dough, the pastry?
Like a shoe, but it's okay. The factory plays a very important... The shoe factory was cool and saved a lot of people. Okay. He is the son of Martha Bukova and Eugene Strausler, a doctor who was employed by the shoe company. His parents were both non-observant Jews. On March 15th, 1939, the day the Nazis invaded Czechoslovakia, the Strausler family fled to Singapore because the shoe factory had a factory in Singapore. And so the owner of the company would send all of his Jewish employees to Singapore to save them. Yeah, so it's pretty crazy. So they get to Singapore, and then... the Japanese decide they're going to invade Singapore. So Stoppard and his brother and their mother fled to India. Stoppard's father remained in Singapore as a British Army volunteer. When Stoppard was 4 years old, his father died. In 1941, when Thomas was five, he, his brother, and their mother were evacuated to Darjeeling, India, interestingly enough. In 1945, his mother, Martha, married British Army Major Kenneth Stoppard, who gave the boys his English surname and moved the family to England in 1946. He told Tom Stoppard, his stepfather told him at one point, "Don't you realize that I made you British?" Setting up Stoppard's desire as a child to become an honorary Englishman. He was really obsessed with this. And he said, "I fairly often... find I'm with people who forget I don't quite belong in the world we're in. I find I put a foot wrong. It could be pronunciation, an arcane bit of English history. And suddenly I'm there naked as someone with a pass, a press ticket." This is reflected in his characters he observes, who are constantly being addressed by the wrong name with jokes and false trails to do with the confusion of having two names. So... his identity was a big issue for him and a big factor in a lot of his writing. Stoppard left school at age 17 and began work as a journalist.
Yeah.
He never went.
Wow.
Never went to university, never went to school. Like, he's just
Damn.
That kind of guy. But he started
Stan
working
a legend.
Yeah. But he started working as a journalist at age 17 for the Western Daily Press. Later on, the Bristol Evening World newspaper offered Stoppard the position of feature writer, humor columnist, and secondary drama critic, which took him into the world of theater. At the British Old Vic, this is late 50s. He became friends with John Borman, who's the director who directed Deliverance and Excalibur and a bunch of other stuff. Became friends with actor Peter O'Toole, both early in their careers. And in Bristol, he became known more for his strained attempts at humor and unstylish clothes than for his writing. but then Stoppard, this is around 1953-54, Stoppard started writing short radio plays. And by 1960, he had completed his first stage play, A Walk on the Water, which was later retitled, goddamn, Enter a Free Man. In the early 60s, he starts writing more radio plays and smaller works. But he starts getting attention. In 1964, a Ford Foundation grant enabled Stoppard to spend 5 months writing in a Berlin mansion, emerging with a one-act play titled Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Meet King Lear. Which later evolved into Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. He then blows up. We will get into the chronology of him next week and all that. But he just starts cranking out work throughout the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
In 1985, Stoppard co-wrote with Terry Gilliam and Charles McKeown a feature film called Brazil, which Bailey and I have been talking a lot about recently. But he gets his first Oscar nomination for that. Stoppard is
Should
also...
Should we make that an end stuff soon?
I'd love to.
It's on my list, yeah.
That's a good one.
Stoppard also co-wrote screenplays for Shakespeare in Love, for which he won the Oscar, and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
The best one. So
no,
Oh my God.
How did I not fucking know that?
Because you don't, you're not a real fan. Stoppard has been married three
times.
Oh,
how dare you?
Also, I agree with that. I am not a real fan.
I am a real fan. Fuck the both of you.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is the only one. No, Raiders of the Lost Ark is the only good one. Stoppard has been married three times. His first marriage was to Josie Engel, a nurse. His second marriage was to Miriam Stern from 1972 to 1992. They separated when he began a relationship with actress Felicity Kendall. He has two sons from each of his first two marriages, Oliver Stoppard, Barnaby Stoppard. Barnaby Stoppard is one of the greatest names ever.
Two British as fuck names, too.
And then his other two sons are Ed Stoppard and Will Stoppard. This is interesting, and this was reflected in a recent New Yorker Radio Hour interview with him. But Stoppard's mother died in 1996, and the family had talked about their history, and neither brother knew what had happened to the family left behind in Czechoslovakia. But in the early 1990s, with the fall of communism, Stoppard found out that all four of his grandparents had been Jewish and had died in internment camps, with three of his mother's sisters. Wow. And that's kind of haunted all of his recent stuff and his an impact on his most recent play. But he's still working. He had kind of said he was going to retire, and then he didn't retire. And he's like, I can't really retire.
Last play in like 2020 or some shit.
He's got one going right now. He's got one going right now. So he's in his 80s and he's like, I tried to stop. I tried to retire. And he's like, I just couldn't do it. He's like, I just feel compelled to sit down every day.
What a life, too. I wouldn't want to stop writing either.
Right.
Damn.
You know, so.
Oh, what a life. Oh, what a lovely, lonely life.
Do you know that song?
But, no.
It's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Can't keep going.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you're right. Good call. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. But yeah, that's that ends Scottpedia. But yeah, fascinating dude. And the fact that he's entirely self-educated and that, you know, and he
doesn't...
Some people are just born motherfucking smart and talented. And
yeah,
just,
I mean,
like,
it's just like I needed school and I was still an idiot when I came out of liberal arts school with two degrees.
Oh my God, totally. But yeah. And so where are we at?
That's it. You did it. Scottopedia. You gave it to us. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. So the next thing we do is we start talking about the play that we're covering this week, which we've already said the name 5,000 times. It's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. I'm excited to talk about this a little bit. There's later I want to get into like all the productions that have happened. I did some research on them and they're exciting. There's some really cool ones. So I'll go down that list later. But I don't know what it's about. I've read it. I've been in it. I don't know anything about it until CJ tells me. So, hey.
Yeah.
CJ.
Yeah.
Break it down.
All right.
CJ's breakdown.
Ever wonder where Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of Hamlet fame came from? What they were thinking during all the Danish madness? What exactly happened after they were sent off on a ship to England with Hamlet in tow?
Oh.
You know, the things that are only hinted at or mentioned in Shakespeare's beloved play?
Barely.
Well, why don't you listen to this fucking episode then?
Ooh, wow. That's the dramatic. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the plot of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. No, you're, I mean, yeah, it's, I love that you turned your CJ's breakdown into a meta commentary.
Because that is play kind is of what this meta. Is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so that's a good place to start, right? So these, we're starting, you're already starting with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, these non-entities from Hamlet, right? These people who, the final, one of the, in the final scene, there's just a line where someone comes in and just says, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And they're like, great. And then they all move
that's
on,
it.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Like, oh, good to know. Good to know. And there's a lot of that in Shakespeare, obviously. Like these like minor characters that whatever. But this one sort of, you know, Stopper took it and kind of turned it into a Godotian
yep.
thing. So meta theater. Talk to me about meta theater. Anyone?
Well,
anyone?
Yeah, it's a complicated thing, and he's layering in so much. I think that that's kind of the accomplishment of the play, is that he's thought through and uses these characters in a very distinct way. So we as an audience know that we're watching something to do with Hamlet, and then we're seeing scenes in between or parts of ends of scenes from the play.
Right.
So it's and then there's sort of commentary about being in a play. There's sort
right.
of a recognition of that and using the idea of theater, the idea of a play to and the characters in a play to talk about the absurdity of life, those existential motifs of life and the randomness of life. Like, and just even in those first couple of pages when he's talking about where they're doing the coin flips and the
yeah.
heads.
But even before, besides like, like getting into like life, really meta theater to me is a structural element, right? It's like using theater to make theater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that
yeah.
make sense? In a way,
yes.
it's like a structural element based, like I guess the definition would be like based around commentary of dramatic theory or theater itself.
Right.
So like breaking the fourth wall is considered sort of meta. And I would say Hamlet itself already uses meta theater. It has a play that literally tells the plot of the play that it's in, right? Which is on purpose, but it's also a meta theatrical thing.
Right. And then the thing that when I watched the movie, something that I loved about it is they would show these scenes happening in Hamlet and it would literally be them watching him do the scene where he does the to be or not to be monologue.
Right.
But he's not vocalizing it. You can just see his mouth moving and they're like, what is he doing? Well, he's talking to himself. Well, that's what Hamlet is doing in the
right.
actual play.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's out to the audience. It's a soliloquy. Yeah, I just... everyone is a different degree of player in this show. And I love that. And I also think you can turn up the dial or turn down the dial depending on how you want to represent each different section of the show. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, also the looks into Hamlet that you're seeing.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
It could be overdone, like showy theater, or it could be like really honest and straightforward. And each thing is a correct decision, but it makes a different statement, in my opinion.
Now, another side of this meta-theatricality that's happening, there's something that I remember the director, who, I don't think was a very, you know, he's not like a genius or anything, but I think he understood the play well enough, who was directing it when I was in it as Claudius. His whole take was like, when you're flipping the coin and it's heads every time, that is actually to signify to the audience we are not in a real world. we are in a story, right? This is...
I actually have an idea about that beginning scene, though, because I kind of got lost in the language when they would go into monologues while they were flipping this coin, to the point that my brain went, are they actually getting heads every time, or is Guildenstern playing a trick on Rosencrantz? And then just the couple times that the other calls it, it just happens to be heads, which I guess is a whole other meta thing that you could say. So.
There's a good amount, if I remember correctly from this past read, there's a good amount of he shows it to him.
Yes.
And then there's a few times he purposely doesn't show it to him. So I you could absolutely do that.
Is he just trying to win more coins?
There's also a lot of him being like distraught by it, like
because
heads.
Yes,
it's still heads,
it's,
you know,
it's this
they've traversed into this world of Hamlet, so they're in a story all of a sudden. They're all of a sudden, they've walked on a stage, they've literally walked on a they're like, wait, what, why is it heads every time, you know? It's I like that. I think it's interesting.
No, and it creates conflict, because and there's sort of this reality fighting art kind of thing that's going on too, because life is random and chaos. And now all of a sudden Guildenstern is realizing that there's something awry here. There's something else in control here.
They're being set on a track.
Right.
And it's stoppered. So they're stuck in a piece of literature that defines that they will die. And they're starting to realize that something has gone wrong.
It's definitely a show for theater nerds.
It's for theater nerds and philosophy nerds too, because then you get into, like, he makes that reference to the monkeys, the famous, you know, if you put enough monkeys in a room for, you know, infinity, eventually they'll type out Hamlet.
Sure.
The problem with that thinking is that, you know, you're projecting an end to it. So, which goes
like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Right, you know, exactly.
Have you ever read that David Ives play, though, about the monkeys who are writing Hamlet, and they finally the to be or not to be speech, and then they're just like, okay, what do we do now? It's pretty good. It's a solid, But no, the philosophy thing is a great thing to bring up here, Scott. I think that's so interesting, because I think that's where it has been, I don't want to say claimed, but adopted in some ways, by the philosophy world as well, much like things like, you know, even like, I don't know, Kubrick films or some, you know, things that you can take and you can go, okay, let's dissect this and look at it from a philosophical point of view. And that's the beauty of art, right? Is that intersection, especially high art like this. But this is high art that lives in a crass vein kind of the whole time. And I love that.
It's true. I was going to bring up just real
quick. It's farting on itself the whole time.
It's farting on itself. It really is.
Yeah.
It's an interesting evolution from Godot, which was clearly a huge influence, where Beckett wrote that because he couldn't figure out another way to express this philosophical idea. And so Stoppard, here's this young dude, you know, young, dumb, and full of cum, but not dumb. And he just goes out and he takes that and then's like, oh, what if I put this in here? Like the connection. We should also say that there was a play from the late 1890s that was also called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern that was sort of about their adventures. And I can't find anything in if Stoppard had been aware of that or not.
Yeah.
It wasn't a huge play, but it was a play that was distinctly about the two minor characters.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So real quick, back to this thing is farting on itself the whole time, right? Okay. Which I love. There's a quote. This is a Stoppard quote, but it's about the movie. I'll get more into the movie later, because I think it's, once I talk through all the productions that happened of this, then I want to talk about the movie after, because it kind of, it relates, but he directs the movie.
Yes.
He adapts and directs the movie. So, when asked why, his answer was, it began to become clear that it might be a good idea if I did it myself. At least the director wouldn't have to keep wondering what the author meant. It just seemed that I'd be the only person who could treat the play with the necessary disrespect.
I feel also he was like, there's some other stuff I want to put in here too.
Oh, yeah, and sure. He did. And there's some fun stuff. Well, because that's actually one of the most fun things. And we've seen that with Pinter. We've seen it with a few other people who, once they get to make the film version, they're like, oh, new medium. I can do other stuff. And it's not necessarily better or worse. It's sort of just like sure. different. You know, the birthday party play is different from the birthday party movie. I mean, not a ton, but it is, you know, or the homecoming.
Yeah, and he got, you know, it was 20 years later by the time he made the movie. And so he gets to tweak with it. Yeah. He matures sure. as an artist and kind of goes, you know, I don't always dig that when authors or playwrights or artists revisit their shit and start fucking with it. George Lucas. But it's cool and it's his, so he gets to do what he wants.
That's true. Okay, can I talk through the productions of this real quick?
Yeah, totally.
Cool.
And also we'll talk awards a little bit too while we're at it, because you know I love that chat. All right, so like you said, Scott, wait, okay, one sec. My notes went away. I'm pulling them back.
Lord.
Like you said, Scott, so the play had its first incarnation at the 1964 Edinburgh Fringe.
The right. Fringe!
Or no, wait. I lied. That's not true. Its first incarnation
right.
was him just writing the one act, and he put it up.
Yeah, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern meet King Lear.
But it was still called that when he expanded it. Still under, I think it was still called Meet King Lear, or had he changed the name by then? I don't know. I can't remember.
For the Fringe Festival, it was still the same.
It was still King Lear. So it goes to Edinburgh Fringe, 1966, and it was put up by the Oxford Theatre Group. And then the next year it debuts in London with a production at the Old Vic, which it gets a bunch more Old Vic productions later, which is fun.
Yeah.
But this is Derek Goldby, whose name we'll hear a bunch later because he directs a bunch of these productions.
Yeah.
But it was John Stride as Rosencrantz, Edward Petherbridge as Guildenstern, and Graham Crowden as the player. And then the Royal National Theatre production of RNG had a year-long Broadway run.
Wow.
From 67 to 68, October to October, 420 performances, blaze it.
Yeah.
420. Stoppard's first Broadway show. Kind of rad. It was directed by Derek Goldby again. And it was initially at the Alvin Theater, and then it transferred to the Eugene O'Neill, which is sick. That would have been cool to see at the Eugene O'Neill.
Oh, my God.
And that was Paul Hecht, Brian Murray, and John Wood. And it was nominated for 8 Tony Awards.
Damn.
So it won 4 of them. What?
I just wanted to say that what we might not fully get was how much that blew up Broadway and the theater world in America. I had a professor who got to see that original production when he was in college. And he's like, you'd seen Godot, you'd seen weird things at that point, but he's like, it was such an artistic achievement on so many levels that you were, and on top of just being an amazing production and funny and weird and that you talked about for days and days and days. It was just, it kind of lit the world on fire.
Yeah. And so, and like we say, it was not just theater people were loving
it.
Because now I think it is more of a, you know, theater people kind of thing. At the time, it was blowing up, you know, all the sects.
Yeah.
The subcultures and such. I don't know what I'm talking about. So the play was nominated for 8 Tony Awards. It wins 4 of them. Best play.
Mm.
Best scenic design.
Mm.
All right.
Costume design.
Okay.
And producer. I don't think they still give that award. and then the director and the 3 leading actors were all nominated, but did not get Tonys.
Mm.
Can you tell me some other things that were happening that year? Here we go. What won Best Musical that year?
What year?
This is 68. The 22nd.
68. I'm not going to look. I don't know.
You're not going to know it. It was Hallelujah, baby! Exclamation point. What? I never would have known that. But here are some things that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern were up against. Plaza Suite, Neil Simon.
Wow. Ooh, I like that one.
The Price, Arthur Miller.
Wow.
A Day in the Death of Joe Egg, Peter Nichols.
Yeah.
And that was Albert Finney, Day in the Death of Joe Egg, who also gets a nom but doesn't win. There was some other, like, I'm trying to find... This is a pretty cool year. The Birthday Party wins Best Performance by a Featured Actor for the James Patterson wins for Stanley against Paul Hecht and John Wood and Brian Murray. So basically, the Birthday Party, a Pinter play, the Stanley. I mean, that role is is amazing if you kill it. But he beats all three of the leads.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty hardcore. There's some good things this year. It says,
and we should say he's 29. He's not even 30 years old.
He's young.
It's pretty insane.
Yeah. And then you have like some special awards that year that went out to Audrey Hepburn and Carol Channing and Pearl Bailey and fun people like that. Marlena Dietrich. I said Martra Dietrich. I don't
Martra
know.
Martra Dietrich.
That's how sleepy I am. And one of the presenters, Anne Bancroft, can you tell me who hosted it?
No.
It's someone who passed away recently.
Angela Lansbury?
Correct.
Yeah.
And Peter Ustinov. Yeah.
Peter Ustinov. Oh, my God.
At the Schubert Theater in New York. Okay. Anyway, back to my subsequent productions. So it then in 87, it gets a New York revival at Roundabout Theater. At the Union Square Theater, directed by Robert Carson, featuring John Wood again and Stephen Lang from Avatar.
Okay.
Not a good actor, in my opinion. I'm sure he was great in this. As Rosencrantz and John Rubinstein as Guildenstern.
Oh, nice.
And then the National Theater in 1995 does a production with Adrian Scarborough as Rosencrantz, Simon Russell Beale of Layman Trilogy fame.
Oh, yes.
And Tony winning fame. Yeah. As Guildenstern. And then that toured England.
What year was that?
Wow.
95.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then several times since 95, the American Shakespeare Center has mounted repertoires that included both Hamlet and RNG, and the same actors were performing their roles in each.
Yeah, that's hot.
Oh, cool.
So that's doing that, like, they've done it, like, three or four times. In their 2001 and 2009 seasons, the two plays were directed, designed, and rehearsed all together to make it, like, an actual shared design. So it looked like the same play from both angles, and I think it was on the same set, and it just changed... changed for RNG. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Kind of cool. Yeah.
So then in 2011, the play was revived in a production before transferring to the... none of this matters. I'm skipping this. It was a West End, 2011 on the West End, but it had Samuel Barnett and Jamie Parker, and Tim Curry was supposed to play the player.
Oh, no.
But he dropped out because he got sick during previews. Replaced by Chris Andrew Mellon. But kind of sad. But then it returned again to the Old Vic a few years ago in a production celebrating its 50th anniversary. Starring Daniel Radcliffe as Rosencrantz and Joshua McGuire as Guildenstern. He's on shows like... He's on Lovesick.
Yeah,
you ever watch that on Netflix? Which I think is on the BBC, it's actually called Scrotal Recall.
Scrotal recall.
Which is kind of funny. And then the last thing I wanted to throw in here. Oh, it did also win Best Play for New York Drama Critics and Outstanding Production from the Outer Critics and things like this. But there was a play this year in 2022 that was released. It's called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
All right. Okay.
Now,
like a Waiting for Godot.
Exactly. So a few years ago, Sacred Fools did a show called Waiting for Godot. It's basically the exact same thing, but it's in an irreverent and absurd one act where RNG realize their characters in a meta play written by Tom Stoppard, and subsequently Tom Stoppard realizes he's a character in a meta play written by Etai Shushatowit. So
wow.
All right.
That's where we're at with that. So I couldn't find any information on it. like at all. That was it. That was like, yeah. This is the description. I couldn't find where it had been produced. I don't know if somebody just added that, you know, it just, I don't know. So anyway, kind of interesting. Three radio adaptations have been done for the BBC with some pretty solid names. And then the movie. So the movie, I want to talk about this a little bit.
Yeah.
The film rights to the play were originally bought by MGM in 1968, the year it's on Broadway.
Okay.
They bought the script from Tom Stoppard for $350,000 plus 10% of the profits.
Okay.
John Borman was announced as director. Kind of interesting. But it was never made.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a lot of information on why. I think they just kept kind of booting it and then never made it.
Borman was, he's one of those maverick filmmaker dudes.
Sure, sure.
And like, he was one of those guys that had, you know, 500 projects always going or trying to go.
And, or was just putting his name on anything. And
right,
then
right. I mean, he went on to do Deliverance. He did the Excalibur movie, which is crazy from the early 80s. And he did a great, really cool flick called The Emerald Forest, which is based on a true story about a young boy who's kidnapped and disappears into the Amazon, and his father spends like a decade trying to find him, and he's raised by the people of the Amazon. It's fucking crazy, but anyway.
Excalibur starring Sean Connery, star of Last Crusade.
No.
It's true.
No.
It's fine.
Sean Connery is not, but Helen Mirren is in it. Patrick Stewart's in it.
Cool.
Liam Neeson's in it. A bunch of
Sean Connery's in a movie called Excalibur, isn't he? Am I crazy?
Nah, yeah.
I'm gonna look it up.
He's in Zardoz. Right.
That's what it is.
The Zardoz.
Okay, so but then they make a movie in 1990, Year of My Birth, and they it's Gary Oldman, Tim Roth, who is back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Dick Dreyfuss. Richard Dreyfuss.
I call him Dick.
Joanna Roth, Ian Richardson. I mean, it's all-star cat. Joanna Miles. Donald Sumter.
Yeah. I feel like the subtitle to this movie should be Richard Dreyfuss's eyeliner.
he's a player.
I keep looking at his eyeliner.
No, he's kind of hot in this. Let's be clear. And he's not. He's not in anything else. There are people who think he's hot in like Goodbye Girl and like older like Jaws even, and not necessarily Jaws, but there are people who think he was like.
I know that he is a good actor, but every time I see Richard Dreyfuss, I think of Mr. Holland's Opus, where he has a really inappropriate relationship with a high schooler.
Well, yeah, but that's not Richard Dreyfuss; that's the character.
I know, but
don't punish him for that.
I know it's a true story. Our basketball coach is still sleeping with girls in my high school.
Jesus, I'm also Christ. Like 99% sure there's a Richard Dreyfuss movie where he and his family, he wants to be like a famous documentarian, so he makes up a fake African tribe or South American tribe.
Oh yeah,
and has his family poses them, and he makes a documentary about them, and it becomes like famous.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
no.
They're just like a white family dressed
I know he's a good actor.
That was the 90s.
He's great in this. And I like his eyeliner in this.
No, and he is. He is great in this. I think he's and he's kind of hot. What are y'all's take on the movie? I think it's Tom Stoppard directs. He adapts.
I'd read an interview that at one point he and Gilliam were in talks that Gilliam was going to direct it. And my big criticism of it is that those actors, you know, make it worth watching, you know.
Yeah,
Gary Oldman and Tim Roth playing together is pretty fucking
Gary insane. Oldman's the one that I'm just like, he's so hot. He reminds me of the guy I was in love with in high school.
He is. And
Oldman's always a babe, though.
He's very emo.
Oldman is even a babe in True Romance when he's doing, like, the worst.
Oh yeah, thing,
which he's fantastic in, by the way. But
yeah. Oh, he's just having he's just jerking off. He's having so much fun. Yeah. But I think it's a missed opportunity because it's cinematically very flat. He's not a great filmmaker, Mr. Stoppard. Like, and so there's I think a missed opportunity to to make it even, to add a layer of meta to it. Like, there could have been, this is a film about the play. Like, there was just, it could have been a little bit more clever. It's sort of a very flat, very solid presentation of this thing where he gets to tweak the script a bit and the performances make it a fun watch. But go ahead.
And I'm going to be honest. I would love to see a live version of this, and I didn't get time. I was going to look on Broadway HD and see if there was a cool live performance of this.
Yeah.
But between reading it and then also watching this movie, it took me 3 sittings to finish the movie. Because I either, like, lost, I like, the second time I sat down to, like, try to finish it, I fell asleep. And the script took me a couple sittings to get through. And I know that it's good, and I know that Stoppard is talented, but I want to see a production of this, because reading it was hard for me, and watching this film, flat. That's, I couldn't think of the right word. It is, it's flat. It just...
Yeah, which is why I think it's so accessible to... Fine. It's not on actually any streaming services besides like Freevee, but it's on like
Amazon
YouTube.
Prime.
It's on Prime.
Well, I put it on Prime, but it had ads.
Oh, really?
Mine didn't.
Mine did, and I have Prime, so I was like, "What's going on?" It was
weird.
But I mean, I could be wrong, but I only watched the first 10 minutes, and then an ad started, and I was like, "Oh, never mind. I've seen this."
Yeah.
But yeah, it has a kind of a lack of any direction, really, right? Besides just some choices made in terms of. Production design, right? But it's as a stage show, it's very vast.
Yeah.
While also feeling like a chamber piece somehow.
Sure.
Like
I get that.
But
it is.
The movie doesn't feel that way. It just kind of feels like a movie, and we're just in the places. And what I love about the show, seeing it and being in it, there's the vastness. While also feeling, and what I mean by chamber piece, to be clear, I mean, I think this is a common term, right? But it's like, it feels like we're in the same little box the whole time. Also, and it doesn't really matter how you design it. It's just like, it's meant to be big, right? Whether you're in these large halls or a ship, you're just in this like vastness, but there's only ever like 2 people on stage.
Right. Sure. And I think that's
using language and nothing else.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point, is that, you know, they come stumbling into these big, big places, and then there's this intimacy that brings you in. And I think even the production that I saw of it, which was okay, it was mostly because one of the actors was just off.
Sure.
So it is a play also, I think, very much about rhythm. It is very much about performance. We were talking about this just getting set up. It's the da 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 da, like it's these pauses in this. So it's always you always feel like you're kind of off balance, and that keeps you engaged in it. And I think that's the trick of pulling it off.
Yeah, I think it has the Godotian nature, right? It has the same tone. I do think. I have seen, especially in scene classes, where 2 people have done it as, you know, that, like, kind of what you're saying, like, as a cadence, you know, and not pull it off.
Yeah.
And I've seen people do it really minute and dry and slow and kind of, and it, like, bring down the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think what you mean is you have to, the director and the cast has to build a rhythm to this play.
Absolutely. There you go.
And it doesn't really exist in the script, in my opinion. And I think that's a beauty of it. That's not a slight. He builds it with beats. There's pauses. He builds those. Those exist, obviously. But like, even when we were reading, when I read that scene, I think of it being kind of a little bit just like, embarrassed to like even like talk to each other, so there's this like vastness there, or there's this like gap there, but it also could be read as just like, what, how much you get, I don't know, how did you get, I don't know, you know, and it's both, they both totally work, but it takes building that, it takes the room, it takes the collaboration to build it. That's, this piece is, it's a beast, it's large and it's chilling and hollow and at times, but like also very fun, and it farts on itself.
And funny.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see, I would be interested to see a production that riffs on a really different Hamlet take. You know what I mean? Mm. Like somebody who does like a very, you know, like I think about the Richard Burton Hamlet, which was famously done with like black turtlenecks and black slacks. Dick Burton.
Dick Burton.
And just chairs, like very like nothing, like cubes. Insane and cubes and just insanely minimal, or something that, you know, punk rock Hamlet, where, you know, all those different variations of Hamlet that have been done, to take one of those and then riff R&G on top of it, or do both of them together. You know, those dual productions. I've got fantasies about using multiple spaces. Bailey and I've gotten drunk and talked about, you know, how can we use all three
spaces? I've never been drunk.
That's you can lie to yourself, but you can't lie to Jesus.
I don't know Jesus.
I also just wanted to add that they cast a beautiful chicken in the movie. I love birds, and that was a beautiful chicken.
As a future farmer of America who's not a farmer, what was your take on the bird?
It was very pretty. It was a pretty chicken, which is a quote from Pretty Chicken.
Right?
The Macbeth quote. Macduff says it. All my pretty chickens and their dam.
You best go outside and run around and spit.
When we're on the podcast, we are in a theater, okay? How about that?
Oh, my God.
So you don't say it. You say Macker's.
Macbeth.
Disrespect.
All the listeners are cursed. We're cursed. It's over for everyone.
Bailey, you've been cursed for years.
Podcasts. Yeah, I have been cursed.
Yeah, you now must share this with all of your friends and make them listen to it or you will die.
Also, go subscribe and listen to Bailey Was Cursed by a Witch. It's a podcast I actually made like 8 years ago. Okay.
Oh, God.
It's Halloween. Pretty good. It's kind of fun.
I'm listening to my Halloween stories my for Halloween the season stories. Right now.
Good, good. Y'all, is there any final word you have on RNG? We have two whole other episodes where we can talk Stopper, where we can talk the things that he does. I think we got pretty solidly deep.
We did.
Yeah.
We got Dick Burton deep.
We got Dick Burton deep. There's just a quote.
It's got Dick Burton.
Okay.
It's you know, so much of the show is about the sort of the conflict of between art and reality, being aware of theater, and there's sort of there's that moment where Guildenstern sort of sums it all up with no one gets up after death. There is no applause. There is only silence and some secondhand clothes, and that's death. And I think that's just a perfect encapsulation of the vibe of the whole fucking play. It's really great. And it's one of those ones that there's a timelessness to it. I think we're at a point where Hamlet can be considered timeless because the themes are so universal. Yeah. And you keep going back to it.
Because that's people the thing. Don't stop doing it.
Right. Right. Well, whatever. But it can always be reinvented. But this is like, there's timelessness to it. I'm always impressed by something, and we've talked about it so many times, that there's no pop culture references. There's nothing that holds it into any time or place. And so it'll be interesting.
Except at the top, he says it's two Elizabethans sitting with each other flipping coins.
Yeah, but I don't think that that matters in any the same way that it doesn't matter in Godot that they're wearing bowler hats. It's still, there's nothing within the text that holds
it. Right. Well, and like the bowler hat, you know, specifically was like, well, that's our idea of a tramp. Right. So that's, you know, especially with the chaplain character, you know, like whatever. It was, so that was the intention there. Whereas Elizabethan, it's because it's Shakespeare. Right. Whereas if you chose as a director to say RNG are two like gamer dudes who have no idea why the fuck they're here and they don't have their switches. So they're just like making games up.
Right.
That's an interesting take. Like, we're going to play tennis with words because we don't have our Nintendo Switch. Like, I don't know. I'm just making shit up. But
the point is, like,
it could
be
anything. It could, you know, and then they get whooshed into this play and they're just like, sure. Are we in an RPG? This is cool.
That's fun.
I just came up with that just now. Nobody steal it.
Everybody steal it. No. Tom Stoppard makes me wish I was watching Jeffrey Rush.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jeffrey,
I just love
Jeffrey Rush has had to have done Stoppard at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he has.
They kind of look alike. They kind of look alike.
He's in Shakespeare in Love. So I
assume. Yeah.
I mean, that's funny. Have you
ever
seen Quills?
In that.
I've seen Quills, yeah.
DJ,
I haven't. Didn't we almost do it at Fools years ago?
I think it was proposed.
There's a movie with Jeffrey Rush and I believe Kate Winslet.
All right.
And
it's sexy.
And Joaquin Phoenix, I think, is in it.
Jaquin?
Joaquin?
Joker? The Joker himself?
The Joker himself.
Joker 2 himself? Okay. Is that it? Are we done?
Yeah,
did we do the thing?
We did it. I have to go check on a cat.
No, you're not allowed to. The last thing we have to do is LA spotlight some LA theater. Like, what do you guys got going on?
LA spotlight.
We're just wrapping up this workshop, so thanks for everybody who came out. Thank you, Bailey and CJ, for your amazing work, and Michael Shaw Fisher for writing it and all that. That was our big thing this week. That's all I've got. There's some shows and stuff that we need to go see, and we'll talk about that off mic.
I don't know who's Mike.
I don't know.
Stay tuned. In the next couple weeks, I'll start pushing a dance show that's actually coming to Fools in December.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Is it coming to Fools or the Broadwater?
Pardon me. It's being sponsored and helped by Fools.
Oh, that's right. You're right. You're right. Yes, absolutely.
At the Broadwater.
The Ladder Up program. Yeah, that'll be cool.
I have nothing right now. Next season, I'm currently directing Henry... Six.
Part is one it part one?
And
with
two.
Joan of Arc?
Yes. I'm doing one.
It's one of my favorite Shakespearean characters.
CJ, we're doing one and two.
I only care about one.
No. It's War of the Roses is what we're calling it. It's the entire story of the War of the Roses. And we are doing two things that I think are interesting that I'll actually bring up right now. Why not? One is that we are doing it in two nights, like Angels in America. You have to come one night for the part one, one night for part two. And the second thing that we're doing that's exciting is we are going sort of from the non-English perspective, because the play condemns Joan. And we want to kind of go from the other perspective. So we're looking at how we're going to...
It's the English perspective of Joan.
You should absolutely condemn Joan of Arc.
And then you do Jean-Henri's The Lark or Shaw's Joan of Arc.
Listen, we should not put that crazy person...
You should do three nights of it.
Brecht did three Joan of Arcs. Brecht did three...
I only care about
Joan of Arc stories.
I only care about The Lark. I need to read the Joan of Arcs by Brecht.
Our idea is more of a mental health thing than like a...
Oh, cool.
You'll see. Come see it. It's next season. It'll be in March. Okay. Let's get out of here. I don't have anything else. Do I say stuff? Is that me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. From Tip Theater Theater. Thanks for joining us for part one of Tom Stoppard. We got two more... episodes of Rosenpod and Gildencast are dead, and we will be less dead on the next two, I promise you.
Yeah.
Next time we're covering fun. It has been fun. Next time we're covering Arcadia, and then we'll be doing Rock and Roll. Go find that. This is a good play. I'm excited to talk about it. Have you guys read it yet? Okay.
Not yet.
It's good. And then I want to find some of his newer stuff because it's available apparently.
It is available. Yeah. It's all on Scribd.
That's
a lot
awesome.
Of it is.
Scribd. Yeah.
Scribd.
Say it right. Scribd.
No. In Shakespeare, it's S-C-R-I-B-D, so it'd be Scribd.
I'm joking.
Scribd.
Okay.
Questions, comments, compliments. You can email us. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Yeah.
I had heard that.
And he also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Annie Baker, who writes every single one of our episodes.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, and she doesn't even know it. And one day, Annie Baker, we're going to buy you a beer.
That was a lazy bit, but we got through it. Good stuff. Okay, y'all. We'll see you later. Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
It was my time to go, my time to be the greatest thespian in Alexandria.
What?
That's in Egypt. That's from Midsummer Nightmare. We did it last night.
Yeah.
Also, Dick Dreyfuss deep would have been funnier than Dick Burton deep.
Dick Dreyfus Deep.
Maybe Dick Dreyfus Deeper.
You're right.
Wow, CJ. Wow.
Tom Stopper. Tom Stopper. Human rights and censorship, political freedom, relationships. Don't stop. Don't stop. Tom Stopper. Knighted by the Queen in 97. Tom is still alive, hasn't gone to heaven above. Thank you, Tom, for Shakespeare in love. Don't stop, don't stop, Tom Stopper. What goes on in that brilliant head? Rosencrantz and Guildenstern sure are dead.